Hi there. Welcome to the Dialogue on Digital Rights for Media Practitioners. My name is Roland Yagaba, and I am the founder of Mwado. Mwado is an African social network that is working to ensure that creatives on the platform earn from their content. I am also your host. This is a documentary-style podcast where we'll take a deep dive into the experiential divide between women and men in media while they're conducting their work online. You will hear views from 7 different Ugandans in the media industry on this topic. But due to the pandemic, the interviews were carried out by sending voice notes recorded using phones. So if some of the sound is not that good, please understand and forgive us. This podcast has been made possible with support from the Women at Web Project, which is under the Collaboration on International ICT Policy for East and Southern Africa, also known as CIPESA, or CIPESA, depending on how you pronounce it. Our other partner is Phoenix Reason, whose empathy workshop framework we have used for the interviews. So now I will let our participants introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Kanara Mugume, and I am an investigative journalist with NBS Television. I'm also a radio show host on Next Radio, political show called The Big Talk. I'm also a podcaster of two podcasts, one called The CoronaCast on coronaviruses and lessons we've learned, and The Election Podcast, one on politics. And that is about the 2021 general elections in Uganda.
My name is Caro Aliek Bayanga, and I am the managing editor for the digital section, digital content at the Monitor Publications Limited.
Hi, my name is Danze Edwin John, aka Dijan. I'm communications and media personality.
My name is Yvonne Injuna. I work with New Vision as a sub-editor. I have worked on TV, I have worked on radio. Now I'm working with print media.
My name is Emmanuel Sejengo. I'm the editor of The Kampala Sun. The Kampala Sun is an English language tabloid of New Vision.
My name is Sima Chakuhede Sabiti, and my background in the media has been quite varied. I have been a radio presenter. I have been a magazine editor. I've also worked in the marketing department of Uganda's biggest media house, as well as working in their online department.
My name is Eva Zanye, Ernest Bazanye. I'm a former journalist, currently everywhere, consultant, writer.
Now that we know our participants' diverse digital backgrounds from episode 2, we shall be focusing on any not-so-pleasant experience they might have experienced while working online. All right. Welcome all of you to the podcast. Thank you for agreeing to participate in this. Let's dive straight into the questions. When was the time while working online that you were made to feel smaller because of something about you that you couldn't change?
In the past, I had done some work with some organizations, which was actually a TV station, and I had hosted the president before, but it was like sort of a youth thing. It's not like a one-on-one interview, but it was sort of a youth thing, and my pictures had been taken and all. And all of a sudden, when I think I did a story that was pro-government, people attacked me online because this is something I'd done in the past, and it was all over my Instagram and Facebook, and had done it maybe 4 years before I joined the NBS. And I could not regret it because this was part of my work. I don't think it's evil to do that, but it's something that I did. People made me feel small, like associating with the president then was an evil thing. And if I was only hosting a program which was part of my KPIs and my work, and people made me feel bad and small, but it's something I couldn't change. It's something that I had done and had never regretted at any one point. So I proceeded to do it, regardless of what people would think about me in the future. And even when these pictures that I had hosted the president were on my Facebook page and on my Instagram, I refused to delete them because what's the crime? There was so much hatred on social media by a group of people, and I felt like they were wrong.
I do not recall a time I was made to feel smaller because while working online, either on social media or something. But what I have noticed about myself is that when I am replying, when I'm making statements, especially on Twitter, I'm very careful what I say, to the extent that a lot of the time I don't put what I would like to say, because I sort of think if I say this, then someone is going to come out and make a nasty comment or come on, you know, say something, especially about my job. So I think if I say this, someone will come and say, oh, you know, when you guys are the Daily Monitor, I can't do this, how can you come out and say that? A lot of the time I find people, I don't know if it's right or wrong, they attach the job to you, so it's you are the organization or the company, so it's like you're not allowed sometimes to make an observation as an individual. And I understand that once one is officially online, they have to be careful what they say and, you know, professional, because especially if they represent in one way or the other a company they work for. But you see, if I can give an example, when two of the companies I tend to maybe go to and say I'm having a problem with this or that is MTN and Umeme. And usually when I have a problem, I don't go directly on their timeline. I will go to their, you know, I'll go to their direct message and message them and say, look, I'm having a problem with this and that. What is wrong? Can I get help? And then we'll have a conversation. And, you know, I'll wait for it to be resolved. And when it is resolved, I will usually say thank you very much. And if it's not resolved, I'll keep asking. I will only go on the general, for example, Umeme, if there is a blackout, and I'll go and say, what is there power? And I'll check, and if Umeme says, oh, there's no power in this area, I would, and my area is not mentioned, I'd say, oh, is this area also affected because we don't have power? And if they say, yes, you're also affected, then I'd be like, okay, well, let's wait for it to be resolved. Or if they say, DM us and, you know, let's see what the problem could be. And I'll go to the ADM, and I may get upset, but I would never, you know, tell this person, you know, with initials, you know, they sign off for the initials. If a person came and they were AM, I'll never say, oh, you AM, you don't know what you're doing, you're horrible, you're just, you know, you're silly, you, I would never insult them, because I know it's, they're not the office, they're not, you know, and it's a whole chain of people who get things done. So if someone along the chain has not fixed something, it doesn't mean everyone is to blame. But I find that the few times I have in the past tried to go and say something, even if I'm not saying anything, you know, we have an error, and then it's you know, I don't mind if people say, oh, you know, MPL, you need to improve on this, this is not good, we're not happy, and that's truthful and that's honest. But if someone comes and says, you know, Carol, who do you think you are? You don't know, you're not doing your job. You are so useless. You are so, you know, that for me, that just, I don't understand that. So I a lot of the time I don't say the things that I wanted to say away from the job, different things, personal, because I'm not ready to indulge in a fight, which many people seem to want to do online.
Okay, this is a funny one. I'm trying to really think about it. Probably I've been on the other end of it, being the one maybe making a smack review about someone, or kind of like innocently trolling, and then they took it badly. But that was way back when I just joined Twitter. I figured being a troll was the thing. I used to like using memes a lot, so I could have offended a couple of people. At least those that reached out to me. We're still friends now. They could have expressed how I could have made them feel small. But yeah, on my end, it's probably about how I used to do my video content. I used to say the phrase a lot, so it kind of used to make me feel uncomfortable and stuff like that. But when I started doing TV and radio, it kind of just gets out of your system, and it's just your trait or your personality or your character. So I'll probably say that's one of those few occasions when maybe when it came to a wrong statement or facts or data shared that then other people come and kind of water down and stuff like that. Professionally, as a professional, you kind of feel watered down as well. But most times I choose to speak things that are very factual. Yeah.
I think the only example that comes to mind was time I was attacked online, but I had made a comment regarding parenthood. And I think it was sort of not necessarily misconstrued, but the person who came for me basically made out that I did not have a right to have an opinion on that because I am not a parent. And at the time, I did feel attacked, and I felt that it was very unfortunate that that person said what they did. But yeah, it did kind of make me feel a little bit smaller. I couldn't change that, you know, the fact that I'm not a parent. There wasn't really anything I could do about it, but I still feel that my opinion was valid. What we were discussing was an example of, as a parent, if your child destroys, let's say you take your child to a babysitter or there's someone who's looking after your child and your child breaks something of theirs, should you, as the parent of said child, be made to pay for it? And I said, absolutely, yes, you should. Yes, you were not there and you did not make your child damage whatever it is that they did, but that is your child. And much as the person signed up to babysit your child, they did not sign up to carry the cost of any damages caused by your child. So there is somebody who did come for me online and said that, Seema, you're not a mother yourself, so you cannot comment on this. So that was very, very unfortunate. That was possibly one of the most unfortunate experiences I've had whilst working online.
No. Oh, the number of disclaimers that you have to put these days, which really... Okay, first of all, I understand fully well that this... And I really, honestly, when I say it made me feel small, it doesn't mean that I felt small. It's the fact that I say that it was an attack doesn't mean that I feel that, oh, I was being oppressed, or I was being attacked, or I was being assaulted. It's really, there are people who actually go through worse, far worse things each and every day, all the time, not just online, in real life, and all their lives, these people are called women. I understand that what happened to me was really, really tiny, and it would happen in any other context. It would have happened if I had said I didn't like Waiki Bender's nose. It was really, but it only serves to show the level of privilege which we gentlemen have on the online space, which is the fact that the only time I can remember being diminished because of something I couldn't change, the only answer I can give you, was this one time when this was actually the first time hashtag men are trash began to appear in Ugandan Twitter. Now, as you know, that right now people are very flippant about it. Sometimes we use it when we're talking about guys late for he was supposed to pick me up at this time and now he's late, or he borrowed my money and he didn't pay it back. I mean, I tried to be easy to flip it. Now, the first time I heard it, my initial thought was that, oh, this is an opportunity for a bit of jokes. I was assuming it was about, because now you see, I have IBS, I have irritable bowel syndrome, which means that when I use even if I'm going to use the latrine, the toilet rather, for a number one, every time I go to the toilet, I fart. So I tend to sit down every time I'm in the laboratory. So my, when they said men are trash, my response was, not all men. Me, I always leave the toilet sit down because I always sit down when I pee. Due to the fact that I do not want to, I'm likely to fart. I'm an old man with IBS. I drank too much strong coffee during my 30s. Now I can't digest anything without having gas. I was just trying to be funny. Now it turned out that the reason why men are trash was trending at the time was a guy in South Africa had raped and murdered his fiancée. It was extremely, it was the most gruesome, and it was a horrible thing that person did, horrible thing that person was, and a horrible thing that, and anyway, I was so, like you said, empathy. As you spoke about empathy earlier on, and I said that the best way to get to care, the best way to approach someone else's tragedy or someone else's pain is to see how it connects to yourself, to find like a person. And I suddenly realized that I do not want to be in the same category or in the same group as this sort of person. So if when you say men are trash, and by trash you mean murder rapists, I do not want to be included in this. And I said as such, I said, look, and if it's about all the other stuff which they say about the, you know, guys on the toilet seat, they're if it's about being complicit in institutionalized sexism, then okay, I'll accept that. If it means being apathetic at times or not acting when you had an opportunity to actually do something, make a change, then I'll accept the label of trash. But I will not be categorized, I will not allow myself to be put in the same category as a murder rapist, let alone someone who was only able to do it because the woman he raped and murdered loved him, trusted him, and loved him enough to become his fiancée, and that's how he managed to get access to her and do those things to her. I was quite really so when I said this, there was a small storm about, it was about, I mean, I don't know, the women online who will tweet something tiny and get a whole tsunami of guys attacking them. I think I had like 8 or 9 people on Twitter who just took what I said and concluded that I was, I don't know. Well, you know, I do know actually, because I have understood how the heuristics and the mental shortcuts work, and how we come to support Trump, or how we come to support Muslims, how Christians come to support Trump, or how young unemployed people come to support Muslims, and so on and so forth. I understand how they used to suffer, and I understand how it came to be that these people came to the conclusion that what I was saying is that men are not trash, and that this was kind of like a repudiation of what they were saying, which was that the murder rape of this unfortunate woman was an awful tragedy. They saw it as if I was opposing their statement, when in fact I so generally it was quite a bit of noise. We lasted all day, and I did feel emotionally triggered about this, because I have a very specific reaction to the concept of rape, and I don't even know why. I watch a TV show and then there's a rape scene, I stop. I'll just stop watching that show. I won't read a book. I don't know. I really hope that this doesn't mean that I have like a suppressed memory somewhere of something like this happening to me or me witnessing something like this. But anyway, I just get very emotional when I have a very emotional trigger reaction to the concept of rape, and so maybe I was quite angry about it. See, that was the time after that, what happened is I cannot change the fact that I am male. I cannot change the fact that other people are also male. I cannot change the fact that if a person is going to penetratively rape another person, it's most likely going to be a male person doing it. I can't change that fact. The only thing I can have any control over in this situation is that I myself am not going to do it, whether I do it or not. The only thing I can control is that I'm not going to rape anyone. And if at all there was a situation, I come up on a situation where there is a rape that is about to happen, that I can prevent, then I have control over that. But when someone commits a rape and it wasn't me, I want to be counted on the side of the people who condemn this act. I can't change the fact that I am not a woman, and I don't. So you see what I mean? I think, well, now, from the way I'm putting this, I think you can, when you compare my position and my feelings as I'm expressing them to the feelings of, again, here, I am, the most I can do is try and use some sort of empathy and try to assume from what shared humanity we have, myself and women, what it's like on their side. And I can see that they might listen to this and realize that this is a person who has it so easy, and what he thinks is an attack is like a pimple compared to what it feels like to us. And I can see that. Now, the result of that was me understanding just how little I can do, just how little I can influence, just how little I can do, I can protect, and just how little I count in the general scheme of things. Well, especially when it comes to sexism and especially like violence against women, online abuse, and so on and so forth. You come to realize that, I mean, being a member of the male group of the male gender, you see, the something is that you are all complicit. We are all in this together. We are all oppressing the women. But then this makes me realize that there is very, very little a single man can do to change this. You are extremely small and insignificant in the patriarchy as an individual, especially as an individual who is not keen on pursuing the continuation of the patriarchy. If you want to change things, if you want to make things more equitable, or if you want to make if you want to make online safer, if you want to make the world safer, if you want to make the world more, the world less mean to our society, less mean and unfair to women, if you have extremely little power to do this, and even and you can't even speak. Now we think that okay, the most you can do is like this is what we always say is that even if you can't say anything, at least go down fighting, at least go down screaming, speak against these things. But that isn't exactly safe anymore, because to speak speaking about gender issues online is a very, very I basically do not, as much as I possibly can, I don't discuss the things that I personally care about on Twitter. I don't. If it's something I care about, I'm going to put it in a medium where I'm more able to have like longer discussions, more reasoned discussions, because Twitter is a terrible place to have any discussion, because Twitter is the kind of place where you can't just say I don't like this guy because he did this, because what he did to this girl. Somehow, the conversation is going to end up with you, I don't know, trying to explain that Bill Cosby, trying to explain that Bill Cosby should, try to explain that the fact that you are against the death penalty doesn't mean that you condone what Bill Cosby said. It's very, very, very specific. But then I don't really blame, I think it's the nature of the beast.
Has there been a time when you were in a specific situation working online and felt physically or emotionally uncomfortable with another person?
Yes, that can happen. But the beauty is, especially now, the way social media has evolved and the different apps have evolved, there's so many different restrictions you can put on your accounts. You can close your DMs, you can, you know. But yes, often, again, the pitfalls and the benefits of social media. The anonymity can be good, but it can also be bad. And then also the fact that people don't necessarily, no one's going to screen you when you're creating, let's say, a Facebook or a Twitter account. They're not going to ask you, Seema, is this really your picture? So you can put anything. And it can make things very awkward when other people misuse that. So definitely there have been people who have, you know, slid into the DMs or whatever before putting the blocks on. That could make you feel a little bit uncomfortable, because people might think that, oh, if I'm talking to this person on the timeline and we're discussing, let's say, football or food or fashion, it gives a false sense of intimacy, which can be misconstrued, and it can be problematic.
I can give an example of a gentleman that I was speaking to on the timeline in public. We were discussing music and football, and he slid into the DMs thinking that our conversations could possibly lead to a sexual relationship or something like that. And when I pointed out that it wasn't that kind of party, he did get kind of aggressive and I had to block him. And further to your question, did I react at that moment? I reacted and I didn't wait, because the conversation just went in a very uncomfortable direction, and immediately, based on his reaction, I realized that this is not somebody I can reason with, so I had to block him.
This guy was really creepy, and he was being very, very creepy, and he was looking around. He was being the online equivalent of looking around for his boy to say, yeah, right, who's with you know what I'm talking about, that kind of thing. And it was repulsive. It was really, really repulsive. It was, and I thought to myself that, why, what is it about me that makes you think that I am going to be part of that? I'm going to want to be part of this. The fact that I just happen to also have a penis, is that it? Everyone who knows me even slightly knows that I will not be involved in this nonsense of yours. But he just kept, you know, kept tagging me, and so, of course, I wanted to respond, scolding. I actually did rush write out quite a number of tweets, scolding the person trying to ensure him that, listen, I do not believe in your homophobia or in your sexism, and I would really, and I would appreciate it if you did not tag me in this. I am, it's only because I am too lazy to come up with something very sarcastic and insulting. I had a whole series of tweets about it. Then I remembered my rule about do not engage, because I know what would happen if I did engage, if I did respond with a series of tweets. The algorithm is going to split them up depending on which ones get the most likes and so on and so forth. Or I don't know, because this was before Threads came in, and it was going to split them up, and then things are going to get taken out of context. In the end, I'm going to find myself trying to explain that I wasn't defending Bill Cosby. I think that's where things always end up. You always end up like that. Like, you start off quite fine, but you always end up trying to swear to people that what you said was not, you are not defending.
There was a time we were having a campaign of sorts. It was the domestic violence week, those 16 days of domestic violence, when gender-based violence, domestic violence generally, when, you know, organizations and people come out to talk about domestic violence in homes and what should be done. So as Monitor Publications, we had wanted to do something bigger than just write stories. So we decided that we would celebrate women who had been able to get out of bad situations, out of domestic situations that were emotionally, physically, psychologically, mentally, financially detrimental to them. And so we wanted women to tell their stories, and we wanted to select women whose stories were the most touching, and then give them something for being brave enough to come out and speak, for sharing their story, and for doing what they're able to do. So we thought it was a wonderful idea. We can start with it, the whole team, and so we started on it. But I think maybe we didn't sort of market it so well. We were struggling to get any traction at the beginning. So what we agreed on the online desk was to sort of say, let's push it daily. So let's push it, let's ask people and say, Do you have a story? Share with us. This is what we're doing. This is our campaign. People will vote for the best story, and the best story will be given. The woman of the best story will be given a reward, something to celebrate them. So we had done that, but it still wasn't picking up. So what we decided with the team was, let's get stories that are talking about domestic violence that are hitting on an issue and tag along with those stories and sort of share that story and say, do you have a similar story to tell? We are commemorating this the 16 days. We are trying to do our part. Do you have a story to tell? Let us know. And this is what we are doing. This is our campaign we're doing, and this is what we're going to do. So I picked a particular story that day, and I said, oh, this is a good story. It was a very good, well-written piece. And I said, oh, this is a good story. Let's tag along with this. So, we shared the story link and said, this is the week we're commemorating this. We are celebrating women who have been able to wriggle out of the situations and, struggle and come through on the other end, and who have stories to share. And if you have a story to share, share with us. This is what we are doing. The women, they then will vote, and on this voted story, we'll get this. And that was how we wanted it to do. We had the best of intentions. But as I realized, we didn't think it through well, because within minutes, my goodness, we were being attacked. Daily monitor, who do you think you are? What are you doing? How are you celebrating gender-based violence? How can you do this? This is so gross. And so I remember we thought, but we're not celebrating that. So I kept on going. I thought to myself, did you make a mistake? I went and I must have read that post about just 10 times to see, did I make a mistake? Did I say we're celebrating beating up women? No. I was very clear to say that we are celebrating women who have come out of this struggle and are sharing their story. So I kept on. So I first thought maybe the first two, three people had gotten and misunderstood us. But the more I read the comments, the more I read the, on Facebook and on Twitter, the more I realized this is getting out of hand. And people started calling me, our teams, our marketing teams, our editorial teams, and saying, my goodness, people aren't happy, put that down. So I thought, I said, we need to apologize because we've been misunderstood. It's not like we're doing something that sort of was cheeky and, oops, it didn't go right. We had a very good intentions, but we've been misunderstood. So let's fix this. So we removed the post, but we went ahead to say we had put this up as, apology, clarification. We would like to apologize. We were doing this, and this is what we recognize that what we were doing did not come out well, and we did not in any way mean to offend anyone or reduce anyone's experience to, anything. We apologize profusely for any negative, insinuations we might have put out there. And it was very clear in the apology that we were apologizing and we were sorry and we made a mistake. That even seemed to make things worse. I don't recall any person coming and saying, thank you for apologizing. Next time you need to do this, you need to do that. It went on and on. And then because people know that I manage the team, the online team, a particular people came out to me and said, you, Carol, this is just not right. You can't do this, you can't allow this. And for those who I thought had, asked to sort of put their point across fairly well, I replied and I said, I am really sorry. We meant no harm at all. And I apologize on behalf of the team that we went wrong. And really, next time we'll do our best to get it right. But I found it funny because other people came to my apology and then even, insulted me the more. And I remember that time I was feeling like a bit upset. I'm like, oh, they're not understanding these guys. I was thinking, okay, let the tide go, and hopefully we'll be understood at some point in time. But one particular person, I don't know who he was, he just came and said, your apology is just lies, bitch. I was like, wow. That really shook me because I thought, you don't know me. You don't know who I am or what I'll do or my experience. And it can't be that I have come out to apologize. First of all, you have apologized as a company, and I have apologized as a leader of the team, and you are still insulting me in this way. And not even trying to engage in a conversation to say, but what were you thinking? Well, this apology is not enough. You need to do this and that. That left a sour taste in my mouth. It really I remember it stayed with me for a very long time, that particular comment, that particular insult. I remember thinking, how can someone just come out of nowhere? And, you know, not, I don't know if you had even followed the whole trail, even understood what we had done, or even seen our first post. And even if maybe he hadn't, and he thought we had done something, you know, wrong, and then to see my apology and still go ahead to insult me, what was that? How can someone go ahead and do that? So that was a time I felt really, really terrible. That was a time I remember feeling not scared, but just like, I think even for a while I didn't tweet, because I thought I'm going to tweet and people are going to say all sorts of things about me. They're going to abuse me and insult me. They're going to, and who knows what else it will get into. So I remember I didn't tweet for a while. That experience was, that experience actually, I think it was one that made me very empathetic towards others. So nowadays, if especially our competitors, if they make an error, I am the last person to throw a stone. I know what that's been like. I know what it's like to make an error, and sometimes you meant well. I know what it's like to for things to happen beyond your control, and you're trying to fix it and no one is understanding. So I rarely go online to, you know, to make noise or to insist on certain things being done, because I know what it's like to be on the other end, to try to do something, to fail, to be misunderstood, to be judged before you could even explain yourself. So for a long time I didn't tweet on my page. I just kept quiet, you know, and then just came back much later. It was a very strange experience. It was a learning point, I think, and also from that point is when I started to be a bit quieter about what I put up and be very careful.
Maybe flirting, I would say. People are very direct these days on online, especially on the TL. Someone will outrightly flirt with you or share they'll go into your DMs, hit on you, say all these crazy things, hit you up, like size you up, etc. And it's extremely sexual. Yeah, girls coming on to men, as in, it's normal. I mean media industry, I'm entertainment and all these things, but sometimes it's a bit uncomfortable. And you end up looking at yourself, you get pressures you really didn't need, get a haircut you probably never would have gotten, and then you get it. So that's just the format of how you're going to end up tuning your life based on these other people's feedback, especially if they're influencers or if they are of a high cloud following. High cloud, I don't mean numbers, but relevance in terms of particular topics and subjects. But I think those occasions aren't as frequent as possible, but they do happen for me as a guy as well, because I put myself out there a lot. People, yes, they do know my relationship status. I'm a married guy, an amazing wife and child, but people will still hit on you, and this affects you in two ways. It boosts your confidence and your ego, yes, but some of it that is too outright and blunt and extremely sexual and live on the TL makes you also feel uncomfortable a bit. So it gets weird sometimes. So physically, emotionally, not really. It's just the pressure that you're then given to maintain a particular standard. Like, for example, the pictures you'll end up posting on Instagram all the time may have be skewed based on how people appreciated that t-shirt that you put on, or the way you tuned your hair that day, or the pose you did, or how you flexed. So it's just that conditioning that comes with the messaging that you kind of get when it comes to these things. Yeah, uncomfortable, definitely. Most times you feel uncomfortable. Approaches are, I think let me just leave that at that. I'm rarely targeted for harassment. I see a lot of ladies are targeted, yes, and also I see a lot of ladies target people's DPs, AVIs and things like that, especially when they're in disagreements on the tier. I find it rather, they don't see the implications in the long run, especially if you make fun of someone's skin color, how small their dick was when you guys used to date, or the fact that now they are fat. Again, I see all that stuff. I know petty is the new cool for the new kids on now.
There was a time about 3 or 4 years ago, a colleague I work with posted something on our Facebook page, which was regarded as tribal. First, I didn't feel uncomfortable, but when I on reading it, and I actually applauded him for his sense of humor, then it backfired and came back to me. My boss, the editor-in-chief, pointed it out. Now the onus was on me to bring it down, and we had to go into a whole disciplinary process with the HR, with the legal department, and other people. Now, for long we had been, as a tabloid, we had been carrying several stories that are close to tribalism. We were always on the verge, because if you notice, in this country there are so many tribal jokes. Go to any comedy night, within the first 30 minutes you'll have heard a tribal joke. So there are so many jokes around tribe. Now the person who posted this had been making a lot of tribal jokes about a particular tribe, the Basoga. But because he's a Musoga also, we took it lightly. No one seemed to get offended. Now the time it brought trouble is he posted something about people from the West, which created a lot of friction. Now the discomfort for me was, it's a situation we hadn't looked into. I hadn't provided much guidance. I loved it for its humor. I didn't consider it tribal, but yes, other people were offended. So I had to find a way of making everyone happy, even after pulling it down, the disciplinary process, warning letters had to come in. I had to boost this person's confidence to go on working. And also from then on, we lost a lot. The humor in our posts lost a lot of appeal. And for me, that was a really low down, because as a tabloid, we use a lot of humor, satire. So if you're being blocked, if there is a place where they tell you you can't reach, it becomes, you become an emotional wreckage. You find out that you can't work. The creative process is always blocked at some point. You're overly cautious on what you can do and what you cannot do. So, should you be more careful with one tribe and not the other? We all come from backgrounds where our names point to a particular tribe. By the mere fact that you call Sejengo, everyone will first and foremost know that you're Muganda, and you'll know how to approach you probably, and what to say and what not to say. So you wonder whether you should call people by first name or by the second name, which usually is an identity of tribe. So there is a lot of discomfort, and it is within digital, because the will and an expression of the freedom is highly regarded and guarded there.
Have you ever felt unable to express yourself online because of your gender?
I got into a situation that one of my friends was being accused of rape. Yeah. He's been my friend for quite some time, and I felt like I should defend him. That's what friends do. I could not believe that he had done that, but someone was accusing him of that. And I felt like if I defended him, one, given my social status, it would be a problem, but also given my gender, he's a man, he's defending a fellow man. So we don't expect much from them, I felt like, okay, I don't think I can do this. Not that I'm a coward, but I think I was trying to be sensitive. I think there's more ways that I could have supported him than just posting online. Maybe give him emotional support or try to take on this case to its conclusion. And if he was guilty, he should answer to the case list. And if he wasn't, maybe all this should stop. But I failed to express myself online.
I've never felt unable to express myself because I'm a woman. Never. I do not recall any such time. I feel that I have been able to express my thoughts, my feelings on different subjects, and some of them that are specific to gender, specific to women. I have very many friends, female friends, and we sometimes go on a tangent. We can, you know, talk about the things that affect us as mothers, as wives, as daughters, as working women, and it's been, and it's fun and exciting. I've never ever felt I can't speak about certain things, or I can't express how I feel about being about a certain topic or a certain issue as a woman. I've never felt that on any platform, really. I feel very very okay, very able to express myself. I've never felt judged or be picked on because of my gender. Yeah.
The number of times when I've felt unable to express myself online because of the gender question, one, it's mainly because I'm a married person, and online has a lot of its social guards, for especially when you're communicating with people of another, with a person of another gender. A typical example in the industry I work in, the entertainment industry, you get women who are doing gracious work out there. They're doing good work. Now, sometimes you want to comment about that woman, and you probably just want to make her feel good. Now, because in entertainment, by its nature, there are a lot of affairs that go on. So a number of times, I just feel like, this one, if I said this, an in-law or a friend or who may perceive it this way, and I stop at that. And in that regard, I hardly comment about female artists on my social media platforms, especially if it is good work. It is easy to either bash or praise a man. I go away with it. But when it's a woman, sometimes someone can respond, and no wonder she gave you a hug the other time. No wonder this. There's a comedian called Anne Cancino. She's a friend, but also we have the relationship of source writer. So at one time she was on stage, and in a skit, she referred to me and said, "Emmanuel Sejengo is a living monument." And now in this skit, she was praising like this guy she has a crush on, and what. So she threw there my name, and we laughed. I was in the audience. She just saw me in the audience, and she threw there my name, and everyone laughed, even the ones who didn't know Emmanuel Sejengo. After that, a few days after, I think I made a post, and she was one of the people I talked about in the post. Oh, and there followed the barrage of the living monument, and what, and what, and what. Anne Cancino later married and separated. Now, with that background, and innocent as I was, and I was still her friend, wasn't sure of how to handle that situation. Yeah, but digital is really a space we are trying to still get used to and see how to go about it.
Yeah, definitely. The wave of the girl child needs to be protected, the boy child needs to pay more attention, we need to out our friends and things like that. I've been in very tricky scenarios, especially as being a communicator, digital marketer, content creator, a relative to some of the people online there and friends to them. There's so many times I want to say something, but because I'm a guy, I can't say something publicly online or on the streets, like they call it, because of the obvious reaction. Let me reference the whole feminist versus men thing that happens on the Ugandan TL and I guess across other regions. It kind of makes you not give people direct feedback, or you choose not to indulge in particular conversations because of the way you will be responded to. For instance, there's this big argument about being overweight. We all know it's dangerous and all those things, but most times if this person is your friend and you know they genuinely should lose a couple of pounds because of the health implications to themselves and also to other people that care about them, you're kind of stuck between a hard place, eh? So you can't really say something. You can't tell them, how about you try these other scenarios, you get. So most times I tend to tackle that by posting my workout or fitness regimes to my friends. And I say, hey, I would love for you to come and join me, as opposed to me telling them, go lose some weight, it's dangerous for your body. Yeah, so things like that. It's usually around those dynamics. Body, opinion, sexuality, even sexual content as it in itself, because the nature right now on Twitter, for example, or Instagram is, I find, this is my personal opinion, I find that the fact that you simply have to take pictures and pose tanning with your ass out for you to get likes isn't the best way to go. But that's them. Do your thing, because I know we're all different personalities. We all want different objectives. So those are things I can't speak about directly online or tweet about them. One, because it will affect my friendship with those people, or it will affect, say, endorsements, or it will affect the community that I surround myself with, which is, I like my personal community neat and tight with people I can genuinely open up to and speak to. So as a guy, it's usually those scenarios, and it's high pressure, especially because now people are more expressive, and I mean, it's their right to do what they want. We can all express ourselves how we should be online, but we get kind of let it go. Politically, based on the nature of what we're in right now, we're building up to elections. There are also things you can't politically say, being the fact that I'm part of a media house, so I can't appear to be partisan, which I'm not, but I simply can't be partisan. The things I'll find, let's say, noob guys I don't approve of, but because I don't want to attack that community, I just let it go and try and be as subliminal as possible. If it's NRM, same exact scenarios, police brutality, etc. I'll speak on all of them, yes, but I won't be direct with the genuine blunt response I would have wanted to give them, because I'll be considered partisan or swayed towards a particular side.
I don't talk about gender online. Again, I've spoken about this a number of times. I've already spoken about this in the past 3 or 4 questions. It's just not the right place. It's not helpful. It doesn't change anyone's mind. It doesn't lead to a healthy, helpful discussion. And especially if you're a guy, if you're a woman, I think you already know that shit is real in these streets. If you're a guy and you want to know, hey, How real is shit in these streets? You're not going to gain any insights or any education on certain online platforms. So I really think that, you know, Twitter and Facebook are not the right places to just look for social justice or education or enlightenment about one another and our individual struggles as, you know, different groups, whether we're talking about race, or whether we're talking about sexual orientation, or whether we're talking about nationality, no, don't, certainly would never ever say not all men on Twitter. It's just don't.
No, I have not. The fact that I'm a woman has never deliberately held me back, at least not on my part, from doing anything. I will express myself regardless. So no, I have never felt unable to express myself.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks once again to our participants for agreeing to be a part of this, and thank you to the women at Web Project and Cypessa for making this happen, and Phoenix Reason for allowing us to use their framework. Catch you on the next episode. I remain Roland, your host.